ACOFP Student Podcast, a production of the American College of Osteopathic Family Physicians.
Good morning, everybody. Hopefully everybody's having a good day so far. This has been a great conference. I've enjoyed it, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. As we move on to our final full day of education, we're going to have a talk on artificial intelligence, and I'll let our speaker introduce themselves. Go ahead.
Testing. And perfect. Well, hi, everybody. Good morning. It is so nice to see a few of you early risers. I know more people will be coming in, but I wanted to thank you all for being here. We're going to be talking for the next 30 minutes, give or take, about AI in primary care. And my name, for those of you who don't know me, is Saroj Misra. I am a former program director in Southeast Michigan. I am chief of family medicine at my hospital, Henry Ford Health System. I'm core faculty with my former residency program. I'm also the associate dean of the Kurtzville College of Osteopathic Medicine, and I'm proud to be your new secretary treasurer for the ACFP for the coming year. So if next year all the money is gone, it's on me. I apologize. So I have no relevant financial disclosures that I wanted to share. I do, however, have some relevant non-financial disclosures that I thought I should include. I majored in English language and literature at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, so my talk may run long, but I promise you my sentence structure is impeccable. In addition, as I said, I work at KCOM. I graduated from KCOM, so I've been able to leave KCOM, you know, physically, but not emotionally. And lastly, because I'm an osteopathic physician, I cannot resist the urge to diagnose your posture from the podium. So for those of you who are slumping, yeah, I see you. With that in mind, I also want to put up an AI utilization disclosure. And while this may seem like a very simple thing, it's a very powerful and important thing that illustrates a point I wanted to make. I think that there are many current reasons why people choose not to use AI. Some of them are very valid, such as potential impact to the environment, the potential perception that the AI may have errors and things like that. But one of the biggest problems I see that people have is that they perceive AI to be cheating, right? That by somehow using AI, you are not putting effort in. And I want to tell you, any of us who have used AI extensively as I have for any elements that they're working on, if you're using it appropriately and correctly, it's not cheating. What it's doing is it's taking care of a lot of the grunt work. So how do we get people to get past this perception that AI is cheating? Well, I think one of the first things that we do is we'd be transparent about our use of AI. And I think that's important not only to get rid of this perception of cheating, because I think once people see that people are using AI, they will normalize that. But I think the other thing is that transparency demonstrates compliance with ethical, moral, and appropriate professional use. So this is my AI utilization disclosure. I'm not going to read it all out to you. But the key elements of a disclosure are always that everything was validated, verified by the speaker, right? Which is what I did. All right. So I've got, well, now 24 minutes to teach you three things. And I'm going to move through this stuff a little bit quickly. So bear with me. The first thing I'd like to do is really get you to stop talking about artificial intelligence, because really that's not what we're talking about when we talk about AI in medicine. We're going to be talking about augmented intelligence, and I'll briefly explain what that means. I think I'm going to be able to show you a little bit of data on AI utilization in primary care and some key use cases as well as adoption trends. I'm going to show you a look into the future for the next 5 and 10 years about how AI can be leveraged in family medicine, and I'm going to show you why I actually think that AI is going to be something that helps us to do even better when it comes to OMT. All right, so I told you that I don't really like the term artificial intelligence, and that's because artificial intelligence is really when we take AI or systems that are AI-based and we use them to replace humans, right? And by the way, we have plenty of artificial intelligence occurring now, right? If you go to fill up your car at a gas station, other than you putting the thing in your gas tank, all of that is essentially AI, right? It's calculating how much gas needs to go into the tank, and no one knows when to stop, and knows what to charge you, and it can run that charge to your cart. Every day, we have billions of financial transactions that have no human user involvement. That's AI too. So AI as artificial intelligence has been around for decades, and it's happening, and it's no big deal. But there are some challenges to calling things artificial intelligence in medicine. For example, artificial intelligence also implies that the AI has autonomy to make decisions, right? And that in medicine is a real challenge. We are not yet at a stage where autonomous decision making can be really trusted for healthcare. The other thing about artificial intelligence is this concept of black box thinking. You know, so the AI is doing something. We don't really know how it's doing the thing it does, right? You don't actually know how the AI systems that fill your tank with gas are working. You don't know that they're actually calculating the right flow rate. You don't know that they're calculating or estimating your tank size correctly. You don't know that the rate they're charging you is the right rate, right? We put a lot of trust into that black box thinking. Not great for medicine, right? Black box thinking in medicine is not a good idea, right? And then, of course, with true artificial intelligence, there's always the fear of displacement, right? So the best example of this from Hollywood, how many of you have seen Terminator 2, right? That's the one that we always talk about, right? The AIs will take over humanity and stuff. And that could be a little bit scary. I once heard somebody who's a bit of an expert on artificial intelligence say, you know, if you told an advanced enough AI system, find me the most efficient way to make a paperclip, by the time it was done doing the work, it would essentially determine that all of humanity must be eradicated. Because as it got better and better at refining that process to make a paperclip, it would start to realize that humans are fully extraneous to that process and may actually hinder the process of making a paperclip. So that's kind of scary. So stop talking about artificial intelligence when it comes to healthcare. Instead, focus on augmented intelligence. Augmentation means that the physician is empowered, that AI is helping the physician, but the physician is the one who is doing the critical decision making. The physician is the one who uses their clinical experience, intellect, reason, and understanding to ultimately piece everything together. And the AI is there to augment those skills, right? And then also the idea that physicians are more transparent than artificial intelligence. So there's a transparency there both for our patients and our peers that augmentation does. So really what I want you to think about is AI as your co-pilot and not really your replacement. I want to share with you some very quick statistics about where we are with AI in healthcare. And I'm just going to put these up. I'm not going to read each of these to you. But as you look at these, I think the one thing you'll come to appreciate, the rate of AI adoption in medicine has outpaced anything we've seen in the last 80 years. Physicians are notoriously curmudgeonly about not picking up new technologies. We do not like to bring in new technologies into what we perceive as a very tenuous situation when it comes to healthcare. So we wait. Not so with AI. If you look at the statistics up there, it's astounding what has happened in AI since 2024, right? And just by show of hands, how many of you here have tried using an AI agent, either in your personal or professional life? So there's my point made out, right? Roughly 98% of you in the room have tried out AI. How many of you have tried it out for personal? Raise your hand. Okay. And how many of you have tried it out professionally? Yeah. So about 60% professionally and about 80% personally. So that tracks with the statistics that you see here. All right. So I've told you a little bit about this concept of augmented intelligence, and I would love it if you all would start using that term to refer to AI. Here's how family physicians are using AI according to the current data. About half of all PCPs are using enabled tools for at least one work use case. About a third are using it for ambient clinical documentation. As you can see from your own little take here in the room, 90% of them have tried or are trying AI tools at work, and about two-thirds are using generative AI for personal use. So what are the top AI use cases that we see? Clerical support, right? So that's things like scribing, right? Information management, patient support, administrative functions. And here, though, is where I think we're going to go as AI gets better and better. You're going to start to see AI being more useful in population health management and behavioral health support. And yes, AI can be useful in behavioral health. I promise you that is true. So what really caused this massive uptake? We don't like new technologies in general. So why do we all of a sudden get into this bandwagon of AI? That's because of documentation. So the data is pretty clear. At least looking at the first year of AI implementation for ambient scribing, on average, it saved about 15,000 hours of time for physicians, right? And that led to reductions in burnout, improvements in work-life balance, an average of about 1 to 2 hours daily of savings per provider. And here's another really interesting statistic. There were more relevant findings in AI notes than in human notes. And so some of you may or may not know Dr. Anthony Tang. He's the chair of the American Board of AI and Medicine. And he says two things constantly about AI. I'm going to tell you the first thing he says at the end of the presentation. But the second thing he says is, one of AI's greatest benefits is it can reduce human stupidity, right? And he says that somewhat tongue in cheek. But this, I think, is what he's talking about, is that AI can look to find and place in the documentation more relevant elements than humans can at times, right? This is Dr. Rachel Friedman from UCSF. And I think this quote summarizes how many people who are using AI currently, especially for scribing, feel. For the first time in my career, I can complete my notes before the end of the day, right? I think for those of us in the room who've been practicing for a few years, if we could walk out of the office with all our notes and charting done, and it wasn't, by the way, 10 p.m., right? Like, we could walk out in a reasonable time. That in and of itself would be enough reason to really strongly consider using AI. There are some places where we're seeing AI use in primary care very clearly. So ambient documentation is one. How many of you are on Epic? Yeah, a few, right? How many of you have used DAX? You know, that's Epic's ambient scribing system. There are tons of ambient scribe systems like Sully AI, and Augmetix is another one. There is some clinical decision support like GlassHealth, UpToDate AI. How many of you are using OpenEvidence? Yeah. If you're under the age of 35, you're using OpenEvidence. Every student, you guys remember every student and resident like 10 years ago, what did they use? UpToDate, right? That was their reference, right? They've all switched over to OpenEvidence, right? UpToDate is rushing to catch up, but they're a little bit late to the game right now. We're starting to see AI chatbots for patient communication, right? They're able to actually provide responses and route patients based on what the patient tells them, and they're able to do so fairly effectively. We are, of course, using AI for diagnostic imaging, as well as, I said, we're starting to get into population health. And this is a really fascinating area, I think, because I think what you're going to see is that we're going to be able to start to predict things that are happening in our communities using predictive AI, right? It's very similar to like how the weather works, like newscasters and forecasters, right? They use predictive models to tell you what's going to happen in your region with reasonably good accuracy most of the time, right? And I think we're going to be able to start doing that. Like, so for example, we may be telling primary care physicians, hey, you need to actually consider buying more measles vaccine and stocking up on things related to acute treatment of measles, have better patient sheets for that. Why? Because we've done population data stuff over the last 6 months. We've seen a 30% increase in the cases of measles in the region. And so we are, the system is predicting that in the next 9 months, we're going to see an explosion of this, right? And that would be wonderful because that helps us to be proactive as opposed to reactive to what is happening in health. So I promised you that I would share a little bit of information about OMT and how AI might actually be really helpful for OMT. So I'm not sure how many of you know, this is Dr. Ravi Assad. He's actually an assistant professor of OMT at PCOM, Georgia. Anybody here from PCOM, Georgia? Okay, not so much. All right. So shout out to Dr. Ravi. He's also a member of the American Osteopathic Information Association and their Digital Health Innovation Steering Committee. The AOA has a subcommittee called the AOIA, and they are very much on the forefront along with the ACFP at looking at AI integration. And this is what he says. AI cannot feel somatic dysfunction in your head, in your arms, or in your legs, all over. We are going to have an explosion of what osteopathy actually is inside of this AI revolution. And what he really means like that is there are certain skills that at least for now, and probably for the next 10 to 15 years, are not going to be replaceable. And surprise, surprise, they're palpatory skills. They're the one thing that we really cannot replace. So if we can replace a lot of things that doctors do, but we can't replace palpation, guess what? DOs, we're even more valuable in a world of AI because we have skills that can't be easily replaced. He does say, too, that as we think about how to integrate AI, AI really has to align with the four tenets of osteopathic medicine, and I think it can. But he also says that if you implement AI intentionally, you can preserve the therapeutic presence. There's this perception that AI will somehow replace doctors' ability to communicate with patients. And I would argue, especially for those of you who are using ambient scribing, that AI actually allows us to reconnect and connect better with our patients because now the technology becomes transparent and we don't have to worry about that piece, right? And I think the other thing is that we are really poised as DOs to lead not only a transformation in healthcare, but specifically in application of OMT. One of the big 800-pound gorillas in the room, if you will, about OMT is that historically, all of us who practice OMT know it works, right? We put hands on patients and we see the outcomes and patients tell us the outcomes. But what has stymied us for the last 80 years is that the amount of research that tells us it works has been fairly, fairly low, right? Not as robust as we wish it was. And this has led a lot of people to call OMT and osteopathic medicine in general, you know, complementary, alternative, sham, quackery, whatever you want to say. One of the real benefits of AI is that when you start to utilize it for research, it can start to parse massive amounts of data to find points of connection that humans simply can't find. And it can also start to help suggest new ways to demonstrate elements related to what you're looking for, right? And I think that we're going to start to see that as we start to leverage AI for understanding better how and why OMT works, that we're going to get a lot of data out of that. There are other clinical applications. One of the studies using an AI agent showed that it was 95% accurate in finding occult fractures, whereas the baseline for human diagnosis was about 50%. But in family medicine, we can start to use AI to like do guided ultrasound joint injections, predictive analytics for OMT patient selection. We now have AIs that can be hooked up to thermal scanners that can actually look at a patient's skin and determine where are hot, cold areas, areas with increased muscle resistance. So AI with tools can help us to find areas of tissue texture change. It can then suggest to us, based on those findings, what somatic dysfunctions might be a consideration, and it can help us to identify what treatment options may be best for the patient. So I think there's going to be some really interesting things. And I think the future vision that we want to imagine is one where analysis of these palpatory findings across thousands of providers allows us to start to validate OMT outcomes more effectively than it has been done in the past. All right. So what will the next 5 to 10 years show us? Well, here's a few of the things that I think are really what we're going to see. So the first is this concept of the infinite AI resident. And this is an idea that the AI is an always-on member of your care team. So right now, I'm using an AI not for healthcare, but rather in my personal life. It's from a company, and the AI is called Nature OS. And their framework or rubric is they have what they call tiny people, right? And so their first tiny people, a tiny person, is an agent called Tiny Nature. And so Tiny Nature can scan your email inboxes and start to send you text messages to give you updates on what's happening and assist you with those things. So it can tell me, hey, Dr. Misra, Dean Wilson from the college had a question about what's happening with the storms in New Jersey, right? Do you want me to draft an email for you? And you can send that off. I'm happy to show it to you first. I'll give a real use case example that I'm dealing with, ironically, in New Jersey. I had one of our healthcare systems tell us, give us a 90-day out. We have to get all of our students out of their hospital system in 90 days. I have 18 students there. Now, all of a sudden, I have to find a new base for them. And so Tiny Nature said, here's what I've done. I went ahead and pulled up the 7 hospitals in a 20-mile radius of the hospital where your students currently are. Here are the specialties that are each hospital that align with the core rotations for your students. These are the ones that have GME. Here are the coordinator names, and here are their contact numbers. Let me know if you'd like me to draft emails to each of them asking you for help with that. Wow, right? Super cool, right? That's what we're going to see with this concept of the infinite AI resident. Right? Someone that's going to be able to look at your patient's data and keep you informed about what's going on and even offer solutions and help to that you can ask the agents to start to enact, right? That is, I think, going to be amazing. It'll allow doctors to take care of more patients with fewer resources, which is a great thing since we have a doctor shortage and are going to have a worse doctor shortage, right? With the advent of continuous monitoring things like CGMs and stuff like that, we'll be able to tap that AI can actually report back those results and make suggestions about what's going on. And really what AI is going to be able to do is handle the routine, right? Like I told you, AI doesn't do the work for you, but it handles the grunt work, or it can if you allow it to. That's what I think you're going to see. And I think over time, what it's going to be is that patients are also going to benefit. They're no longer going to have to go to the doctor all the time because the doctor is always with them. What a powerful concept and idea. So if we were to look at predictions for the next 5 to 10 years, I think this is what you would see, right? These personalized treatment plans where we start to integrate genomics and a person's lifestyle, and then be able to make better direction for their healthcare. And we're going to see, I think, that if we as primary care are involved in this, we're going to be the command center of healthcare, which frankly, I think we already are. But if we can start to leverage AI, we're going to be even better at this. So the AOAIA I told you about is developing professional AI standards that are focused on osteopathic distinctiveness. They recommend starting safe and scaling smart, right? So start with simple things. And they're really focused on getting information from you. So if you get asked for filling out surveys from AOIA, please do it. All right. So I have 6 minutes left. And I am never a person that believes the best thing in the world to do is just talk at you all day. So we're actually going to try a little activity. So here's the activity. I want everybody to get out their smartphone. And if you don't already have it, I want you to go to the website perplexity.ai. So Perplexity is currently one of my favorite AI systems. By the way, I have no stock or any value in Perplexity. I just really like the way it works. One of my number one reasons why I like Perplexity is because it actually provides the sources for all the answers it generates you. So go to perplexity.ai. You should see it'll like open up a tan screen. You don't need membership or anything like that, but I'm going to show you how AI can augment your clinical reasoning in real time. All right. Has everybody got that open? Does anybody have a problem? If you have a problem, raise your hand. Awesome. So here is the clinical scenario. We have a 28-year-old female patient who presents with chronic low back pain, worse with prolonged sitting, with a history of sedentary desk work. She's tried NSAIDs with minimal relief and is interested in non-pharmacologic options. So now that you're at Perplexity, I want you to enter this prompt. What are the latest evidence-based non-pharmacologic treatments for chronic low back pain in a young adult, including osteopathic or manual therapy approaches? So go ahead and type that prompt in. If you're Dr. David Park, of course, you're so smart. He's just actually having the AI read the prompt and then put it in, right? I mean, that's how I know he works. Okay. So everybody able to enter that prompt? You should be getting back responses. If you've gotten back a response from Perplexity, put your hand up so I can get a sense of how many people have. Okay, a couple people still. Are you actually doing it, those of you who have not raised your hand, or are you just looking at me like I'm a fool? All right. For those of you who've done it, take a look at that response. And I want you to ask yourself, you don't have to say it out loud, how does it compare to what you would recommend, right? And you could ask a follow-up question if you want, but you certainly don't have to. But here are some of the questions I have for you about what you saw. Did the AI capture some key evidence-based recommendations? Did it address OMT or manual therapy approaches? What did it miss? I guarantee you it missed some things too. What would you add to its answers? Most importantly, how could this help you in clinical practice? Now, I tell students all the time, the big problem for students using AI in this way is that we're able to validate or invalidate AI responses. Why? Because we have experience, clinical experience. We have a wealth of experience that tells us this is right, this is not right, this follows my intuition, this does not follow my intuition. But as students and residents, you don't have that clinical experience. So using AI to provide you answers is a really bad idea in healthcare. But I think AI can give you a really strong starting point. It's your clinical judgment, though, and osteopathic training that's going to make it exceptional. Okay. So I want to summarize by giving you a playbook for AI. Here are the 5 things you can do this coming week that I think you should do. First, try an AI tool. I love Perplexity. I highly recommend it. And if you really like it like I do, there is a pro version of it. It's $200 a year, which I will tell you the way I've used it, they're not charging enough for it, frankly. But if you have an educational email, you can get a subscription for $100 a year that gets you to Perplexity Pro, right? So you don't need it, by the way. Perplexity AI is free, and it's quite powerful even in its free form. But Pro adds a whole host of additional AI agents and engines that are pretty cool. But if you don't want to do that, do ChatGPT, do Open Evidence, try something. I want you to explore documentation tools. If you haven't done this yet, this is the easiest, most obvious way to introduce AI into your clinical practice. Try using AI to draft a patient handout. Hey, I need a handout on chlamydia for my patients that talks about current recommendations in language that would be understandable by someone with a 4th grade reading ability. Can you also modify it now to add in information about gonorrhea using the latest guidelines? Okay, great. Can you add a couple images to this that are colorful and fun and cartoony, but also explain things? Perfect. Thank you. Now send it to me as a PDF file so that I can print it. It's amazing how quickly and effectively it can do this as you get better at it. It'll be able to do things, but we need to be the ones that are constantly appraising it and making sure everything is right. And the most important thing is talk to people who are trying to figure out how to integrate AI into medicine. Like, AOIA is constantly looking for information from all of you about what matters with AI, what doesn't matter, and what you're doing with it. So if you have an opportunity to participate in surveys, do so, because you're on the cutting edge. So here are the key takeaways. AI is not artificial intelligence. It's augmented intelligence. It's augmenting your intelligence. It is your co-pilot. It's helping you to fly the plane. And by the way, if you're not using it yet, you're kind of behind the curve, because everybody is. And if you're trying to stay away from it, I think you're going to have a harder and harder time. People in the 90s figured that out about the internet, right? And AI is the next version of that kind of phenomenon. Documentation is where AI can be of most immediate benefit to all of us. I truly believe that OMT is somewhat AI-proof, or I should say, it's AI adjacent. And I think that we have a unique advantage because of our ability to palpate and treat. And I think what you're going to see is the next decade of family medicine will turn into this continuous AI augmented care model that I've shown you. So start using AI now and be on the leading edge of that effort. I told you about Dr. Anthony Chang, and I told you he had two things he always says. This is my favorite thing that he says. AI will not replace humans, but humans who know how to work with and integrate AI will replace humans who don't. Dr. Chang is a pediatric cardiologist and the chair of the American Board of AI and Medicine, ABAIM. They have two excellent courses, an introductory and advanced course. The introductory course is a 2-day virtual course that he teaches. It's about $600, and you get board certification with it after you take an exam. You don't need the advanced course unless you're a clinical informatics person. I don't recommend it. But I really think he's right. It's not going to replace us, but the people who know how to use it are going to replace the people who don't. And with that, my time is done. I'd like to thank you so much.
The ACOFP Student Podcast is a production of the American College of Osteopathic Family Physicians. To learn more about ACOFP, please visit www.acofp.org.